Hey there, Freedom Fighters. I just startled you, didn't I? I talk way too loud. I told you I grew up in New York. Ingy is here to help us out. Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I am the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. I swear, I try to tone down my energy. I really work on it so hard, and I can't because I just love what I'm getting to do. I love entrepreneurship like the way that I did even as a 7-year-old kid, 10-year-old kid, 15-year-old kid, throughout my life, dreaming one day of being an entrepreneur, reading endless books about entrepreneurship, and actually being in it is more fun and also more heartbreaking and exhausting than I thought, you know? So I try to tone down my energy level. I can't. I'm here in Singapore, which makes me super excited. I've gotten to meet so many people here and so many entrepreneurs, and I didn't realize how entrepreneurial this city, country is. Joining me is Gabriel Lim. He is an entrepreneur who went to Silicon Valley, who got funded by Y Combinator, who of his own choice decided to come back to Singapore. Could you have stayed in California if you wanted to?
Yeah, I think so.
Our immigration policy is kind of tough, but I know Y Combinator has lawyers to help you out, right?
Yeah, the O-1 visa and stuff like that.
They've got people there to help you. Mm-hmm. So you could have stayed. He decided to come back, and I want to find out why he decided to come back. What was it about Singapore that drew him? He is the founder of a tool that I think many people who are listening are going to, I know they're going to want to go try it, and many of them are going to end up loving this. It's called Sales Whale. It's automated sales development assistant. Here's what it means. You know, you get all these email addresses of people who kind of sign up to your site. They're experimenting by getting a white paper or doing a demo. They're not sure about you. And you want to follow up with them and get some of them on a call with a salesperson. But how many SDRs do you need, sales development reps, do you need to fire off messages to them, to respond when those people respond, and eventually book the call with a salesperson? A lot, right? So this guy, Gabriel, and his team decide, you know what? A lot of this could be automated. We could just use software to send out that first message saying, hey, I saw that you signed up. Do you want to get on a call with the, you know, that whole thing? Hey, you didn't respond. Do you want to just check this out? He decided he was going to automate that. He did automate it. He got customers. He then went to Y Combinator, and now he came back here. I wanted to find out how he built up his business. And I can do it thanks to two phenomenal companies. The first will host your website, right? It's called HostGator. And the second will help you hire developers. It's called Top Tal. Gabriel, what message came through? Be open with me. I saw you reach for your phone.
No, it's fine.
Slack on the team contacting you.
Yeah.
You're maybe the first Singaporean I saw with only one cell phone. What's going on?
Oh, wow, really?
A lot of you people have two cell phones. I'm seeing some recognition here in the room. What's the revenue?
So right now we're north of $1 million in annual recurring revenue.
Okay.
That's all I can say.
Is it significantly north of $1 million?
No.
No, okay.
No, yeah.
And
so we just raised our Series A, right? So I think if you guys know the benchmark for Series A companies, you probably can work backwards.
There's a benchmark for how much revenue?
Yeah, like at least $1 million in ARR, right?
Okay.
At least in this part of the region. I know it's probably higher in the Bay Area right now.
I went back and I saw the time when you guys weren't charging for anything. It's free software. Yeah. I also went back and saw what you were doing before. You're a guy who was working on something called Getting Real, right?
Yeah.
What were you doing at Getting Real?
This is a boutique mobile software development agency. So what we did was kind of like custom software work for, you know, companies, building like mobile applications, enterprise mobile apps, games, stuff like that.
And you were a developer for them?
It was my company.
It's your company?
Yeah.
That's why it closed up afterwards.
Damn.
It's gone now, right?
Yeah, it's gone.
Because you left.
Yeah.
So the thing that got me was, the reason I didn't realize it was yours, even though I kind of saw that on your LinkedIn, but I assumed I misread it. Here, I've got your LinkedIn right here. Principal, Getting Real. I assumed it wasn't because that's where you had the problem, where you were apparently sending out what kind of email?
So for us, we have a ton of inbound leads, right? So what happens is that we actually have to qualify them because a lot of people, they're just like tire kickers. They're not like really serious. But not just that, but you know, where we actually got the inspiration for Salesville was also through working with our customers. So we're working with some pretty large MNC,
What's
companies.
MNC?
I don't know what it is. All right. It's great. I just shared.
What type of companies?
Samsung, Epson, Rocket Internet, Herbert Berder Media. These are just.
These were your clients?
These were our clients back in Getting Real Software.
Huh.
Yeah.
So you decided you're a developer, right?
Yeah, I'm a software engineer.
You wanted to get some clients. You created Getting Real. My sense was you called it Getting Real because you were buying into the whole
David Hanheimer-Heisen and the whole
was cut out the extra features, the bloatware, decide for your customers, keep it elegant. You bought into it and you said, I'm calling my company Getting Real.
Yeah, absolutely. After the book. Yeah.
I love that book. I think it's still to this day a great book. Mm-hmm. It holds up and it's underrated. I bought it and I remember printing out the PDF of it for a friend. Mm-hmm. Did you get the digital version of
it? No, I didn't. I have the physical copy, but I have no idea where it is.
There was a physical copy of that book. Yeah.
Nice.
So, so you got that, you created this company, you got clients for yourself, mm-hmm. and you saw that they had a problem. Talk to me about the problem as they experienced it.
With regards to sales flow or with regards to...
The way that they were, your clients, going about getting their traffic to convert into sales by using people to develop the sale and turning around.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think fundamentally the problem, you know, that we noticed was that between sales and marketing. So basically sales and marketing alignment, right? So normally in a lot of large companies, you see a very huge divide between the marketing team and the sales team, right? So what essentially happens is that you have a marketing team who has like, what, $250,000 budget, and they spend on the events, you know, trade shows, you know, paid advertisements, right? They generate a bunch of leads. And then they hand these leads over to the sales teams.
Yeah.
Right? Want to guess what happens after that?
Ooh, you know what? I bet that what they do is they add it to an email list, probably some junky like MailChimp thing, and then they hope that some of those are going to convert. It's someone else's problem.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? And it's part of the sales team's mandate to also like manually follow up with these leads through like emailing, following up, calling these people. But what you often notice is that the salespeople would cherry pick, you know, the top few, maybe, you know, leads, and they would just kind of let rest languish.
Got it.
Right. So this was a huge problem that we see across, you know, many organizations, right? So that also kind of like form part of the inspiration for Salesville in its current model right now.
And so you were watching this. Why did you decide this is a problem I'm going to tackle?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
To be very honest, I wish I had some kind of sexy story for you, but the truth is that Salesville started off as a side project. So, and I mean, it was not even the first iteration of right? Like there are many, many iterations of Salesville, right? We tried to build a mobile CRM. We tried to build, what do you call it? Like, relationship intelligence tool. So basically I was just like, I was bored, right? Like I was commissioned to build software for large companies, right? So on my free times, on nights and on weekends, I'll just be like working on side projects. And Salesville just happens to be one of the side projects.
Very similar to the 37 Signals guys who wrote Getting Real and then created Basecamp, which was a big hit.
Yeah.
That's what you were going through as you were doing it. Talk to me about one project that you poured your heart into that didn't work out.
Ah, that's a good one.
Do you remember one?
Let me think.
Was it the CRM?
The mobile CRM, right?
Mobile CRM meaning like an address book, essentially.
Yeah, an address book, right? So basically what happens is that we would... So have you heard of this startup called RelateIQ?
No.
They got acquired by Salesforce for $390 million, I think back in 2014.
Okay.
So what we essentially was building, unbeknownst to us that RelateIQ was working on the same problem, we were trying to build a mobile version of that. So basically it's a mobile app. Right. We ingest the emails, right, of like, salespeople.
Okay.
And then we actually surface, you know, data and people you should be following up to in within this mobile application. I spent like, almost 8 months of my life working on this idea. But ultimately it didn't really work out
because,
I think because we sucked, right? Because we let,
why do you think it sucked?
That's a good question. So we tried to, you know, sell this to like, you know, our friends, people from other startups. We were selling for like, $49 a month. And we kept getting feedback that, oh, this is really expensive. We lowered it to $39 a month, to $19 a month. And we couldn't really find much traction. I think at my maximum revenue with this product was like, $1,200 a month. And, so I guess in the end, we just decided to kind of like shut it down and move on to the next product.
Let's analyze it a little bit further. I'm kind of curious because I think a lot of people in your position would have this idea that they don't want to trade time for money.
Mm-hmm.
They want to build their own thing. Mm-hmm. They want it to be able to grow beyond them, but they can't even find the time to do it because they have so much client work, right?
Mm-hmm.
The fact that you did is big, and I want to come back to that in a moment.
Absolutely.
But then let's analyze why that first version didn't work so we can learn from it. Why didn't it work? Why that first product didn't work?
To be honest, I think we were not intentional about solving problems. So it began with like, oh, I want to build something cool,
yeah,
right? There's this like new Gmail API that we could actually, you know, hack on something interesting.
Yeah.
And we didn't do a lot of customer development, or rather I did not. So I was spent like what, 99% of my time just like coding, right, on this application. So kind of like, There wasn't much product market fit. You could sense it, right? When you're talking to people, they're like, ah, yeah, sounds interesting. Yeah, I'll probably try it. And then when the rubber meets the road, it's like, ah, yeah. So that was kind of like, I guess the real reason was that we did not do customer development. We were not listening to what our customers wanted. We were just building whatever we wanted. Like we wanted to build something cool.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily something that people wanted.
Okay. That makes sense. Mm. Was closing it hard?
But I think the next day, I think 24 hours later, I moved on to the next.
Really?
Yeah.
It was just like that. Yeah. Let's go build like something that. Else.
Yeah.
So how did you find the time as somebody who was developing work for clients? How did you find the time to actually do it?
Yeah. So, I enjoy programming a lot, right? I think I was working like about 16 hours a day back
16.
Then. 16 hour days. So like in the morning and in the afternoons, you know, we'll be coding for, you know, building like client work, and then like, on nights and weekends, I'll just be hacking away at side projects. And to me, it wasn't tiring. It was fun, right?
Like, you come home where you work. No, you were working.
So we had an office. So we had a small shop house office. So it's myself, my co-founder back then at Get Real Software, and I think five other software engineers, right? So in the morning and afternoon, we'll just come in, work on client work, and then roughly like 6, 7 p.m., I'll go out for some dinner, come back to office, and finally I get to work on my own stuff. Yeah. And I'll just like,
this is something. Ashwin, you're here. You tell me if this is true or if I'm just like imagining it. I feel like people work longer hours in Singapore than
really?
In the U.S.
Really?
I've lived in the U.S. 10 years. Worked at consulting firms there and here. It is true.
He's saying he worked in consulting firms in the U.S. and here, and it is true. Yeah, even like, so look at the receptionist over here. She was here last night till 5:30. I saw her and I said, yeah, I'm surprised you're here. She says, yeah, I'm here till 6. I said, didn't I see you here at 8:30? I was one of the first people in the office. Said, yeah, 8:30 to 6 o'clock. Right? And this is a receptionist at a co-working Regis space. Mm-hmm. That's just shocking for me because in the U.S., it's, I guess, 9 to 5 and they're done.
Mm-hmm.
How do you find time for relationships that way? I mean, love, I see you've got a ring, but also friends.
So that's an interesting point. So my wife is actually my co-founder. So she was my co-founder
Venus.
Venus, right?
Yeah.
At Getting Real Software and then now at Salesville. So,
you would sit and code at the end of the day of working for your clients. The two of you would sit in the office and code?
Sometimes she would go back home first.
Okay.
But other times she would just be in the office, you know, accompanying me.
And you'd both sit there and code?
She would be doing design.
Okay.
But normally I work on my harebrained ideas alone, right? I try not to rope her in too much. Yeah.
Wow. All right. And
so that's hyper optimized, right? Like your co-founder is your wife, so you don't have to spend too much time. Like, now I have to spend time with my wife. I'm just kidding.
No, actually that makes a lot of sense because you don't have to say I'm stopping to work to go do this. Growing up, were you like that too? Did you come from a family here in Singapore that pushed you to work longer hours, study more?
Not really. So, I'm born and bred in Singapore, right? So my parents were relatively lax. They came, which is very rare, right? Because like Singapore parents are crazy.
Crazy, like
crazy.
Give me a sense of how crazy they are.
So at the age of 3 or 4 years old, they send you to like enrichment classes, right? Like,
not to interject here, but the school system here is really strange.
Yes.
What do you mean by strange? I wish we had a mic on you.
Olivia would just recoil at because from what you've told me, if she's as hippie as you say, school system here, there's something called a PSLE, which is like when you're around sixth grade,
they stream you.
They basically tell you what you're worth.
At sixth grade, they tell you what you're worth?
Yes.
This
and
is it.
What your career path would be.
What was your career path going to be?
No, it's not literally what your career path is, but basically they stratify you. So I did extremely well for my PSLE. So I went to the top school, like literally the top school in Singapore after my PSLE.
PSLE.
Yeah, Primary School Leaving Examination. And so this is like a rite of passage for a lot of
studying
Singaporean
hard to
parents.
Go through it.
No, it's not. So it's not the child that's the one that suffers, it's the parents.
Why?
So when you see, normally when children reach the sixth grade, right? Their parents will store up all of their vacation and their leave, and like 6 months before this PSLE, they will take leave to to tutor their child to make sure that they ace the PSLE. That's that, and I wish I was exaggerating. I'm not.
Did your parents?
Am I wrong? Am I wrong?
People take a whole year off.
Yeah, they take a whole year off sometimes.
So that they can be
parents take a whole year off.
Yes, be there
to go
with their child. Right. To make sure that they don't fuck up their PSLE.
I wish
allowed to swear.
You can swear.
Yeah, okay, perfect.
Ying Yi, who's here with you from Salesforce, she's cracking up about the PSLE. Your parents too, did they do that?
They were not that strict.
They were not that strict. They only took 6 months off, not a year.
I don't even know. Figure it out yourself.
Is it helpful, like, honestly, if you look back, is it helpful to be pushed that hard? Don't feel like you have to give me the stereotypical answer. I want to just get to know it. Do you feel like it's helpful to be pushed that hard? Or not?
Not at all, right? So
it's not helpful?
No, it's not helpful, right? Wow. So if you look at Singapore, I think traditionally we, at least until recent years, right, we are not known for being very entrepreneurial, right? People here, they want to follow the kind of cut and dyed path, right? Be a doctor, lawyer, banker, right? These are the stereotypical, like, Singapore path, right? So, like I said, I was lucky, right? My parents didn't push me that hard. They just kind of like, just do whatever you do, right? You know, yeah. Okay. So that worked out for me, I guess.
And so what did you do then instead?
After school or?
No, instead, if you didn't have to work that hard on the traditional path of studying, getting, acing these tests and so on, what did you do with your time instead?
So I played a ton of sports back in school, rugby, so in my secondary school, we actually, had computer lab lessons. So I was actually spending a ton of time in the lab as well, like, you know, hacking away at stupid flash games, building those super ugly websites.
So it was working out for you then. The fact that you were working on these stupid ugly websites and you called it actually did lead to this life.
Yeah.
So, and your parents then were right to tell you, don't sweat it too much.
Yeah, I think so.
Did you feel like a loser at the time? Like, look at all these people who are doing so much better than me?
I think so. So I come from a family of, like, overachievers. So I have, like, cousins, right? So, like, half of my family tree are, like, doctors and the other half are, like, lawyers.
Uh-huh.
So their parents push them extremely hard. So I'm, like, kind of like the slacker of the family.
Did
you
feel like a slacker? Did you feel like you were wasting your life?
I did, right? So, like, you know, my parents would be telling, my relatives during Chinese New Year, they'd be comparing grades. Like, oh, my child topped her class. You got, like, second in a cohort. Gabriel, what do you do? I got, like, 30 plus in my class of, like, 33 people. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. I can't believe this worked out. So you start this company at that point?
Your parents proud? No, that was like way earlier. That was like 13, 14
later
years
later on, getting
much,
real.
Much
were your
later.
Parents proud at that point?
No. So my parents wanted me to... So I'm not sure if I shared with you, but I actually did not go to college. So,
no, I didn't know that.
Yeah, my parents actually wanted me to go to college, right? My original plan was like, maybe I want to be a doctor or... No, not doctor, sorry. My grades were not good enough for that. Like, maybe like I don't know, banking or like, you know, be a lawyer. So that was what I thought I would do with my life, like when I was like 15 years old.
Okay.
But, so in Singapore, we have this thing called military service where you have to go through
two
compulsory years.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I was in the army, I was just doing some self-reflection. And so the thing is, I didn't come from a very well-to-do family. So I was thinking, I don't really know what to do with my life. I'm not too sure if I want to burn all my, you know, parents' money on like, starting a course that I'm not very sure about.
Yeah.
So I just decided that I would want to like kind of bum around for a year to figure out what I want to do. And in that year, what I actually did, so after I finished military service, I was like 19 or 20 at the time, I started a discount coupon website.
Okay.
I became a semi-professional poker player.
Okay.
I was doing a bunch of weird stuff, right? So like my parents were like, dude, like, yeah, I know, like, you know, we told you to do whatever makes you happy, but like, what the hell are you doing? Right? So that 1 year was kind of an interesting period where I was just trying to figure out what I want to do. And I only started getting real software, I think, 2011, 2012?
Okay. Yeah. Do you feel like a loser at that point? Were you doubting yourself a lot? Or were you I'm looking at you, you're in the I'll show them mindset. Am I right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to show them poker will make sense because I know the math.
Yeah.
I'll show them because I'm willing to put in the talent. You did. That's who you were. I see you light up as you're saying that. And then the discount coupon site, why didn't that do well? That seems like a good idea. At a time when those sites
didn't do well. So I think that lasted for like less than half a year. So, when we started, you know, we were hitting the wave, right? Groupon was like, I think they were like doing extremely well.
Yeah.
So, you know, when when I started, I didn't realize how much cold calling I would need to do. I'm calling up SMBs, right? Hey, you know, this is, Gabriel calling from KubeCout, you know, So basically, it was tough, right? I'm an engineer, right? Like that was painful to me, but we did well, right? So I think our very first deal, we sold like 150 coupons for like, mm-hmm. I think, $75 per coupon.
Okay.
And then our second deal, we sold like 1,500 coupons at $32 a pop. Right.
Okay.
So I think for the first 2 to 3 months, it was pretty good. And then afterwards, we realized that the market started to get very crowded, right? It started to get very saturated.
Yeah.
From charging 25%, you know, per coupon, we're getting like 20, 15, 10, 5%. And I was like, shit, you're not making much money.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I'll just like, you know, move on to the next thing.
I want to come back to that. Sure. Move on. I see that a lot.
I
want to know whether it's intentional or not.
Yeah.
For somebody who's listening to us, I want to tell you guys about someone who's listening to us who's creative too. I want to tell you about HostGator. HostGator has this, you know HostGator?
No.
It's a hosting company that I like that they're inexpensive, but that middle-sized plan that they have gives you unlimited domains. That means if somebody like you has got a bunch of ideas, all they have to do is go back to their HostGator account, fire open another WordPress install. Now they got a coupon site. Doesn't work out, don't like it, close it up. What's next? You know what? Wirecutter's doing well. Why does nobody make Wirecutter for camera equipment? Camera enthusiasts always want as much data as possible, and they're likely to click the link and go to Amazon. I'm going to come up with that. Great. They go again to their HostGator account, hit another button. They get a whole website just to do that. Try. You know, Groupon, Andrew Mason told me that he created it on WordPress.
Oh, wow.
First version WordPress. Same thing here. Take your ideas, whatever they are, to HostGator.com/Mixergy. You'll get an unbelievably low price. You'll get good service from them. And if you pick that middle option, it costs maybe a buck or two more. Mm-hmm. Let's find out how much more it costs. HostGator.com/Mixergy.
$2?
No, here, look at this. The small plan comes out to $2.64 a month. The bigger second plan is $3.98. I get no extra money if you pick the middle plan, but here's what you get when you do that. Unlimited domains. And that is the power to just keep experimenting. HostGator.com/Mixergy. Do you feel like you didn't stick with ideas long enough?
Absolutely. So I think that was the theme of the first 24, 23 years of my life, right? I was
the
just bouncing
of
around
the first 23
yeah,
years.
Yeah, like just bouncing around from stuff to stuff, right? I was just like trying things out, you know, trying to get experience. Not experience. I wasn't doing it consciously. It's just like, when it stops getting fun, then that's where I'll move on.
Is it that it stopped getting fun sense? Or that you didn't that if it doesn't produce, you start to doubt it? That you are someone who I see you, a lot of who you are comes naturally, right?
Yeah.
And so when it comes naturally, it means you do well. When you end up with an obstacle, it means this isn't the right
thing. And then
move.
Suddenly you have to put in the work and then you realize, shit, it's not as fun. It doesn't,
yes.
There's diminishing returns.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Especially where if you were someone who was crap at first, you would have to prove yourself. And every little bit of success would feel like, all right, I'm making some momentum. But if you do well right away, your first deal, I did the math, it was about $11,000, right?
Yeah.
Second deal, about $32,000 from the coupon site.
Yeah.
Suddenly, if you hit an obstacle, I'm not doing well. What's wrong? As opposed to saying, nothing's wrong. This is life.
Mm-hmm.
I have to make calls.
So this was a lesson that I learned after, in the later part of my life.
When did you finally get that lesson?
So getting real software, right? So we stuck at it for 4 years, 4.5 years, right? So there are many, many times I just wanted to throw in the towel. But I guess I was just sick of bumming around from idea to idea with very limited success. I wanted to have something that, I have a solid put a solid win on the board.
Okay.
Right. And I think we did that with that
it's
company.
This is the time that I'm finally going to stick with it and I'm not gonna give up until the world gives me what I need.
Something like that. Unfortunately, we did give it up in the end, right?
So,
getting real software.
You're saying getting real software was where you're going to stick with it. Got it.
Yeah.
I thought you meant sales whale. Okay, give me an example of a time when you were going to not keep going with getting real, but because you pushed through, the business got better.
Wow. I'll say probably in the early days, right? So in the early days of getting real software, we were just building crappy websites, e-commerce, applications for people. So we were charging $3,000, $5,000, $10,000, And after a while, it's just this is a grind, right? And we were not the only player in town. It was so we were not differentiated, right? So I think it was around that time, like, the mobile boom started to really take off. And I was like, hey, you know, seems like there's a lot of demand for iOS apps. And, like, there are not many iOS programmers around. So I went to the library, got my hands on all the iOS development books, you know, finished them in, like, you know, 1 or 2 weeks. And then started to offer iOS services to clients. And that's where kind of our business took off, right? Like,
just to be clear for people who are listening, because you talk fast like me, iOS, right?
iOS.
Apple's, platform. That's when things took off and you started to specialize. You also started to increase your prices.
Yeah, that's right. So we pivoted, right? We changed from kind of like a general, like, you know, software development house to like, oh, we only do mobile apps right now.
But it was more than just mobile. I couldn't grab the freaking screenshot off of the archive. It said Getting Real is a Singapore mobile app. It was something else. It's artificial. What is it called?
Augmented reality.
You started focusing on that even.
Yeah, yeah.
So it wasn't just enough to do iOS. It was iOS augmented reality. Was that your specialty?
No. So just iOS mobile apps. So, yeah. So, like, you know,
I worked so hard to find that phrase on the site.
Yeah. So that was a very interesting project we did for one of our clients, right? So, they were kind of, so Herbert Berner Media, right? So they had this magazine, like they have like different, like, you know, so back then, they had this, mobile application that we were building for them. Yeah. So if you were to kind of, you know, open the app and put over the magazine, you can actually see like a 3D, right? Visualization of like a car, right? Or watch, and like you can literally play around with it. So we built that on top of the Vufora framework. It took me like 1 week to learn that. And then like my co-founder was building a 3D models for that. So that was a pretty fun project to work on.
Yeah, you are like a fast learner. Okay. Then Sales Will starts to take off. Why did that take off? Did you start talking to customers? What was it that allowed that business to take off?
So I don't think Sales Will actually took off then, right? So we went full-time in December 2015. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's where, you know, me, my co-founder and my CTO, so a third co-founder, you know, came about full-time. Back then we were like, we only had like a handful of what, beta customers, right? And we were building out the initial version of Sales Will. So it wasn't a breakout success by any means.
How did you get the first beta? So you built it. How did you get the first beta customers?
Talking to my friends. So I had like friends in the startup industry, like, hey, you know, I have this product, you know, want to use it. So
was the original idea artificial intelligence from the start?
Yes.
There are tools that do what you do without the artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. The tools would do things like, you put a list of email addresses, you create a template for your first message, create a template for your second, third, fourth, etc. And as soon as somebody hits reply, the sequence stops, right? Yeah.
So this was the initial initial iteration of Saleswell, right?
Did that.
Yeah.
No artificial intelligence, it was just...
No, with artificial intelligence. So basically what we do is that we go through the email messages and then we tell you how to improve these email messages, right? We have this like kind of AI assistant that coaches you on how to send better emails.
But it wasn't reading my potential client's email and responding. It was just reading my message to them saying, Andrew, this is stupid. Like, I've got an example here. Hang on. I found one. Give me a second here.
Yeah.
Okay, here's one. The person says, Justine Wong, this is a sample, subject line, how we can improve your website performance, right? Yep. So your software looks at that and
says, subject title, like, hey, this is a shitty subject title, and then this is how you can do it better.
It says, our system flagged this as a subject that is likely to be misconstrued as spam marketing email. Yep. What has worked surprisingly well based on our data is super simple subjects like, hi, first name. And that's what you did.
Yeah.
Automatically recommend based on what people did.
Yeah.
And did you also fire off the second message if people didn't respond to that?
Yes, we do. That's it. So basically it's very similar to the tools that you mentioned, right? Like Yesware, Talk App. It's just this layer of artificial intelligence on it, which honestly wasn't super compelling. But hey, we did get into Y Combinator with this idea.
With that idea?
With this idea.
Did you have customers when you had that?
Just a handful of customers. Paying customers. So for all intents and purposes, we are like, go ahead.
So I had a note here to say, why did Y Combinator let him in? What do you think it is? No track record of sticking with stuff.
Yeah.
Track record of development, which they love, right? You don't know what it is. Do you remember the question that they asked you?
I didn't know. So let me share the story with you. This is a very interesting story. So, I remember it was like, around early February.
Okay.
So me and my co-founders were like at Starbucks, we're coding away, you know, building away at this, application, this iteration of the idea. And when I was surfing Hacker News, I saw at the bottom of the screen, like, hey, you know, applications for Y Combinator Summer 16 batch are open.
Yep.
So I was like, hey guys, look, Y Combinator open. Like, Gabriel, fuck, can you focus on your work? Like, can you stop doing random bullshit like this? I was like, okay, it's okay, no worries. Let me do it. Like, I'll just bang out an application, right? You guys don't have to do anything. So I'll just bang out the application. And then after that, you know, I took a 1 minute video of whatever that we built. I said, okay, now they need a 1 minute video of us, right? So come here. You guys don't have to say anything. I turn on the webcam. I start talking like, hey, I'm Gabriel. This is what we are building. And I sent it over to YC. And I didn't expect anything, right? Like, no one, we barely have any Singaporean or Southeast Asian Y Combinator startups. Not many, right?
Yeah.
So 1 week later, I received an email from YC saying, hey, you know, we love your, you know, we love you guys. We love what you're building. You know, we'd like to fly you down to Mountain View for an interview.
Uh-huh.
All expenses paid.
Wow. Okay.
I was like, wow, guys, let's go on a holiday. Let's go on a vacation, right?
That's so, it. You weren't thinking we're going to get in.
No.
People practice the interview questions. They practice. Oh, you don't do any of that.
No. So what I did was that I went through all the interview slots, right? I told my co-founders, look, there are X number of interview slots and they're probably going to accept the X number of people, right? We have a 19% chance of getting in. So let's just go there and like have fun, right?
Okay.
And we are probably not going to get in, like 19% chance, even after getting
19%
in. 19.1% chance of getting in, even at the interview stage.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. So.
So you go in, by the way.
We go in.
Can I just tell you, Mountain View is not a good vacation spot. What to do there?
we took a ride up to San Francisco afterwards.
Okay. Yeah, I still say not a good vacation spot, but okay, fine. All right. So you go in there, you have the meeting.
So when I went in there, who was it? Oh, Sam Altman was in the room, Justin Khan was there, Kessa Yunis. So it was pretty nerve-wracking, I have to be honest, right? So before...
You get what? 5-6 minutes?
10 minutes.
10 minutes.
Minutes, right? So before we even sit down, before our butts even hit the chair, they were like bombarding us with questions and like, oh shit, no, I wasn't expecting these questions. And then like, you're just kind of rolling with it. Right. At the end of the interview, you know, when we step out of the room, we were like, ah, shit, I think we did really badly. We didn't cover any points that we wanted to cover. Right. And okay, that's it. End of the dream. Let's go back to our apartment.
And you're not somebody who stresses about this. You don't go back and you go, damn, why didn't I work harder?
It was a long shot from the very beginning.
You were always good with it being a long shot.
It was, right?
Okay.
Yeah. So
that's got to be a benefit of being the slacker of the family because I was like the only one in my family who went to college, so like everything has to be great.
So went back to apartment. We rented Airbnb. My two co-founders, you know, went to take a nap. Ah, I'm so tired. We went to take a nap. I went for a run, and I think 400 meters out from the house, my phone started ringing. Like, oh, it's a US number. I wonder who will be. Oh, pick up the phone. Justin Khan's on the line.
Justin Khan.
Yeah, like, hey, you know who am I? Like, yeah, Justin. Like, you know I'm calling. Wait. Hold on. Don't say anything. I started sprinting back to the apartment. And then it's like, hey, dude, like, you know, relax. Yeah. Remember apartment? Woke my co-founders up. Put him on loudspeaker. Like, okay, Justin, go. Like, hey, you know, we really like you. Love to offer you, you know, a slot in YC, 7% for 120,000 USF. Yeah, fuck. Of course we accept, right? So that's the story how we got into to Y Combinator.
Wow, we. How did they help shape your business?
It was tremendous. It was a fantastic experience. So
I saw the photo, by the way, of the three of you. Yeah, five different photos, I think, out there. Really? The three of you with the Y Combinator sign.
Yeah, we loved it. Like, we had a blast all the time.
Yeah, so yeah, tell me, how did they help shape your business?
So I think number one is, you know, YC's motto, right? Build something people want.
Yeah.
And I think this is something that, you know, all along in our life, I'm not exaggerating when I say that, like, I probably created like 145 side projects. In a 145 side project in like 4 years, right? And one thing that, you know, we didn't take seriously was like customer development, talking to users, building something people want. It's just something that YC drills into you, right? Like, so they force you to talk to your customers.
How?
They force you to do customer.
Saying, what did you do?
So,
who'd you talk to?
I'm repeating too much. So basically every 2 weeks, you know, so YC is so huge now, they shut you into different groups.
Yeah.
So they lock you in a room with your group partners and you have to go around in a circle to kind of share what you're working on, problems that you're facing, where you're stuck. And this is kind of like where you will get like the brutal treatment from your group partners. Like, hey, you know, why are you guys doing this? You know, why are you doing that? Right? No, that's stupid, right? Like, so it was a very interesting experience, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
So you felt like you had to talk to your customers. One thing that I noticed about you is your early customers were from Asia.
Yes.
So did you have to make calls in the middle of the night?
Yeah, we did. So I was up like, I mean, I have some photos, right? Like 2 a.m., 3 a.m. in the night. I'll be on Skype, you know, talking to
potential customers.
Talking to potential customers in Asia. And then like in the morning, I'll be talking to potential customers in San Francisco. So yeah, but it was fun.
So once you were actually really talking to customers, the thing that's always been a challenge for you.
Yeah.
And how was it? Did you take to it as someone who likes to code and develop? Did you like it?
It was a grind at the start, but after a while, you realize that, oh my god, like you're learning so much, and like, damn, why didn't I do this earlier, right?
What did you learn that you didn't know before?
And specifically with regards to the product, or
what did you learn about your customers that you didn't know before that surprised you?
Mm. So I think one interesting insight that we had was for this iteration of the product as well. So one thing that I learned was that this idea was dead on arrival.
The one that you just described.
Yes.
Why was it dead on arrival?
So because when we're talking to the customers, we're asking, hey, you know, how are you using the product? Hey, walk me through. You know, what do you like about my product? What do you not like about my product? We realized that a lot of them was not actually using the AI component. They were just using us like a very cheap kind of like Yesware or Tab. So they were using the sequencing module a lot.
Yeah.
But not so much of the AI portion.
And we not asked them, paying attention to the advice that I just read.
Yes. So basically when we asked them, hey, why are you guys not leveraging on this advice? Like, hey, you are a sales manager. Right? Why aren't you enforcing this advice for your salespeople? I mean, you agree that this is helpful advice. In what they told us, they told us that, hey, you know, we really love the suggestions that you give, but look, it's a little convoluted. Why, if you guys can give suggestions on how to send better emails, on when to follow up with customers, you know, stuff like that, why can't you cut the sales development reps out the loop altogether? Why can't you guys just do this instead of telling them what to do and they still have to do it? And this formed the foundation for the next iteration of Salesforce, which is the current iteration.
This iteration
right now that we're seeing a ton of success with, which is we took this, right? And then we went back and we're discussing internally, me and my co-founders, hey, you hear what they're saying, right? Like, I've recorded calls, you are reading your memos, but this sounds like a freaking insane idea. Like, I'm not even sure if it's tractable. I'm not even sure if this can be solved, right? With current technology. So we were just debating a ton of it, about this. And we managed to find a pretty elegant way to solve, like, on the back end, right? To solve this problem. And this actually became the next iteration of Salesforce, which is this iteration that we've been running for the last 3 years. Right. And
you know what? That is something that only is obvious once you hear it. Here's why I'm thinking. I ignored the second message.
Right.
I'm studying up on you. And even the first one, I felt like it was just so long-winded that it was like, okay, interesting. Why don't you just do that as
right,
a subject
right.
line?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's so obvious in hindsight, right? But we didn't realize. We were like neck deep in code and like, I'm just wondering why people are not using it.
I wonder if people can even understand it without seeing what I'm talking about, because it does look really elegant. The advice is on the side. It's super, like, I agree. I'm nodding as I see it, but I ignored it.
Exactly.
Right. And so you went back and you had to figure out how to do it. What's the elegant way that you created so your software would write it?
Mm-hmm. So a bunch of technical hacks. So basically, you know, we had to go back to the drawing board, and the first problem that we had to solve is basically how to understand responses, right? The intent when, so that's the only way we can run with our own advice.
Because you could do the first message easy. It's a templated thing.
Yep.
People can okay it or pick from your templates. Was it pick from your templates?
No. So think of it like composition branch. So they create like their composition branch. I wish I brought my laptop so I can show you a demo of how the software works. So basically the insight we got was that when we receive an email, how do we kind of break it down into like components, right? That we can actually like run kind of like processing on each component.
Let's say this then that. So you have a bunch of
This then that.
Okay.
So like a reply that comes back like, hey, you know, thanks for sending me these. Unfortunately now it's not a good time. I'll look to receive more information. Right? We break it down like sentence by sentence, like, hey, what's the intent of this response? You know, what is the sentiment? What is it exactly they're asking? What's the topic classification? Are there any name entities in this email? And then from there we actually reconstruct to kind of like have a picture of what this person's email is trying to say. And then, you know, we are actually able to deploy the right response with the right collateral to this person.
But who writes the response? Is it your client or you?
So
you internally were going to write it.
We create like a whole, we call it a conversation topic tree
that has
a bunch of messages, snippets that we put together like creatively that look as if they come from a human being.
And then how do you customize it for different types of businesses then?
So right now, today, we have a customer success team that actually, you know, sits down with each customer to do onboarding, and then they create this whole universe of responses.
For them. And then for the first time, how did you do it?
First time, it was just, the first version sucked. The first version, we were only able to handle like yes and no responses and request for more information. So if the conversation gets too complicated, we stop responding and then we flag this
to the marketing.
Which is actually
okay now that I think about it, because ultimately, if somebody's responding at all, they're pretty decent.
Perfect. Yeah.
Right.
That's right. So the first version sucked, but like, we kind of like just evolved the product as we went along.
And how did you start analyzing what people said?
Mm-hmm.
How did you do it?
like
what software, what did you do on the software end to do it? So one of the first companies that did something like this really well was X.AI.
You
remember them?
Yeah.
They blew up. Everyone talked about how they've got software that can understand you and book meetings for you.
So I'm going to review our secret sauce, right? The way we do it at the back is similar to X.AI. So what happens that we have a team, well, we call it human in the loop, right? So basically it's not pure software. We have a bunch of human operators. So what happens when email comes in?
Yes.
We break it down into what we, like maybe 14 right now, micro tasks. So basically, all the operators would see is kind of like a dashboard. There's this internal dashboard with this very, very micro task, you know, all the confidential and, identifiable information is stripped out. Like this sentence, is it positive or negative? Just indicate this sentence. What is the classification? What's the intent? Right? What, are there any name entities? Annotate and highlight any entities. And basically what we do is that we, based on all these like, information, we put them back together and then we kind of like, the computer now understands,
So if a prospect hits reply, it's not artificial intelligence software that's doing it. It's human beings who are asked to answer questions to tag different parts of the
artificial intelligence software combined with humans. That's why we call it human.
But at first, was it humans at first?
Human and AI from
the very beginning.
Yeah.
How much AI was it?
Very little. Very, very little.
So one thing, I forget who it was who I interviewed who has an artificial intelligence company who said, every good artificial intelligence has to start with human beings doing it. And if they tell you they're lying to you.
Yeah, absolutely. So very little. We started off with very little, right? A lot of manual labeling, annotation, right? In the early days. I still have nightmares when I think back to those times.
Because?
Because I was the one doing it. I was doing sales. I was writing the software, freaking like, you know, as the task was coming in, I was like annotating. I was clicking like, you know, yes, no, positive sentiment, negative sentiment, request for information, topic classification, annotating name entities. Yeah, it was all me. I think I did like 10.
Why name entities?
So name entities, example, like, you know, our potential competitors, right? So let's say one of our customers, they are Zendesk. So Zendesk is a customer.
Uh-huh.
If someone replies and say that, hey, I'm already using Freshworks, what's the difference between you guys and them? Freshworks is a name entity. It's a competitor to Zendesk.
So do you also tag it as a competitor for your client?
Yeah, we do.
You do, got it. And so enough people do that and you realize, okay, from now on, whenever we see a competitor, it's tagged and we know how to handle it.
Absolutely.
Got it. Yes. All right, let me talk about my second sponsor. Anyone who's listening to this, who says, I need this in my business. We've actually been doing things in a very automated way. It's time to add artificial intelligence. It's actually not as scary as it seemed to be. I can see the sales well, did it basically, and then improved. I need a framework for it. I don't know people who do it. They do. All they have to do is go to TopTal. Top is on top of your head. Tal is in talent. They could hire experts who've done this already before. And this goes for anything that you need. You bring them in. They help set up the framework. If you like it, you keep working with them for as long as you want. Or you say to them, guys, now transfer this knowledge to our team. Our team will take over. You guys are thinking of writing this down? Good. If you need this, write this down. TopTal.com/Mixergy. When you throw that /Mixergy, did I say that clearly? Because I talk very fast. Top is on top of your head. Tal is in talent. TOPTAL.com/Mixergy. When you use that, you get 80 hours of Top Tal developer credit when you pay for your first 80 hours. In addition to a no-risk trial period. Really good company. I love them. One of the things that I saw that you did was, well, actually, did Y Combinator tell you to charge?
They did, but we still did a pretty shitty job. So in the early days, even while we're in YC, we're charging like $39 to $99 a month for this software.
Uh-huh.
That didn't work out. So today, our largest customer is paying us north of $250,000 a year.
I couldn't find the prices on your site.
Yeah, and then so we start at $1,000 right now, $1,000 per month.
Per seat?
Not per seat. It's kind of like, it's kind of like per license, I guess, which multiple users can share, right? So depending on how they scale, I'm happy to go more into details, right? So, our smaller customers are paying us like $1,000 a month. And then like our enterprise customers are paying us like six figures, $250,000 a year right now.
That means that that one client is taking up about a quarter of your sales, of your revenue.
Slightly lesser.
Here's the thing that I saw in the early days. Somebody wrote a review on where is this? Captera.
Mm.
Look at what he said. Pretty buggy. Duplicate records in Salesforce multiple times.
Yep.
Not easy to bulk send. Which actually, and then he's seeing the upside of it. He goes, which is good because it's forcing me to do customization. But here's the thing that got me.
Hmm.
By the way, 3 out of 5 stars features and functionality. Here's the thing that got me. He likes the software. He's 4 out of 5 stars overall. This person is actually net positive, very big fan of your software. Why did people, and this is not just a random person, several people said very buggy and they still liked it. Why were so many people into it even though it was buggy?
I think first, finally now, I guess we solved a real problem, right? It solved a real problem that I don't think there's any other software in the world that actually solves the problem quite the way that we do. And to be very honest, the software was buggy in the early days, right?
Okay, but it was buggy in the early days, and yep, the problem that it solved was what? It was they just want to load up their email addresses and have their salespeople have hot prospects. Someone who's possibly going to buy. That's it.
So it's the whole two-way email conversation, right? So just imagine that today your sales rep, you load up like maybe 1,000 prospects into your database, right?
Yeah.
You're probably going to get like 50 to 100 bounce emails. And because these leads may not be, you know, around, you have to manually process them. I think you're probably going to get like 100 to 200 people say, I'm not interested. Some of them who say, I'm not interested, but I contact me again in like, you know, the next quarter. Right, and you have to manually process them.
Manually, right? Create a task for yourself.
Manually create a task for them. You know, you have to reply them and say, "Oh, I'm sorry."
And even in this buggy version, you did that for them. You automatically would create a task.
Yeah,
oh,
right.
I see. When you get serious, it's like we could laugh at all the bugs, but when I talk about the features you're proud of, I see the seriousness in your face. This was in there. This is a feature you're proud of.
Yeah, right?
And it was creating a task in what software?
So we actually created a task back in Salesville, but we actually have the option to sync back to Salesforce. Does that make sense?
So in your software?
Yeah, so we'll create a tag in the software, but for it to reach its full functionality, because who logs into Salesville? Like a sales rep does not log into Salesville to check
the
task.
What? Into Salesville?
Salesville.
Into Salesville. Yeah. Okay, got it.
Right, so for it to see its full functionality, you have to sync this task back to Salesforce.
Got it. Okay.
And it was buggy. The sync was buggy.
How soon did you... Yeah, I can see. Multiple people said that it was buggy with the dupes. How soon did you incorporate Salesforce?
Salesforce? How soon? I think within the first couple of months.
Okay.
Right? First couple of months of a very rudimentary version.
I wish that I could find it. It seemed like one of the first messages that you sent, maybe this is before Y Combinator. It's gone here in my notes.
But one thing to be cognizant of is that there are two versions of Salesville that's like on the internet right now. So I think for you to get a better picture, you probably should look at G2 Crowd.
Because the
danger is that, you know, some of the reviews are about Salesville is actually about the previous product, the old product, which is also called Salesville.
And I saw G2 Crowd had way more reviews, which made me think these guys probably are asking their customers to go to G2 Crowd. Yeah. That's like, it is. Yeah, I get it. But what did I see in the beginning? I know what it was. Couple of things. One, you guys used to compare yourselves to MailChimp. It was like, look at how a salesperson would do this in MailChimp. And look at how MailChimp makes you have like the whole unsubscribe versus SalesWhale. It looks like a regular email. Mm-hmm. At some point, you stop comparing yourself to MailChimp. Mm-hmm. You recognize that's not where your customers use it.
No.
Yeah. Right? Okay. The other thing that I noticed was back then, you had a whole section for developers. You wanted developers to build on top.
That was misguided.
Maybe
we will come back to that maybe in the future. But in the end, we realized that we were really selling. Because in the early days, we were selling to other startup founders, right? So other startup founders, they are technical like you, they're engineers, they're like, hey, you know, I want to build on top of your platform, integrate my stuff. And you kind of get dragged down this path. But in the end, we realized now, like this version of Salesforce now, we are selling to the enterprise. You know, our key decision makers are not startup founders, like, you know, who are also engineers.
Right.
They are CMOs, VP of marketing, right? Director of marketing. So what they want Salesforce integration, a robust Salesforce integration.
Yeah.
Right.
This is what happens when you stop selling to your friends and start talking to customers.
To customers, right? Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah.
What's the difference between these two features? This is, there's the Engage and Prospect.
So Prospect was the original version of Salesforce. We applied the Y Combinator with it. Then
it's
Engage
prospecting. What does that mean?
No, it's basically the one that you're showing me. The one with where you send sequencing and then like there's the AI assistant on the right hand side.
That was
the Prospect.
That's called Prospect. Got it.
Yes.
Okay. And Engage is more our automation is going to.
Yes. So what we happened is that we queued the Prospect product. So we queued the Prospect product 3 years ago. And then we doubled down on Engage, and right now we only have one product, right? So very, very focused right now, which is Engage. Which
and
is just kind of like the Salesforce product.
And you
right
stopped
now.
Even calling it Engage, it seems like, because it's just Salesforce. Because
just
I followed old articles to Engage.
Yeah. Salesforce.com/Engage.
Yeah, and it's a 404. I go, wait a minute, what is this? They're called Sales Whale, and then they're also trying to promote Engage, and Engage is when it's a hyperlink. This is confusing.
So confusing.
But
right?
Now I understand. Now you get it. I understand what you're working on.
Yeah.
You still love this?
Yeah, I do.
You do?
I do. I wake up
it's
every morning.
It's tough to stick with it.
Very, very grateful to be where I am now and to work with the team that I work with.
The first customers I saw were, where is it? It's like, this has got to be an American writing about this because it says, Grab is your is one of your customers, and then they explain it by writing more about Uber. You know, it's like. By the way, I didn't realize how big Grab was.
Oh, yeah,
I owned Grab.com years ago, so I've been following the company.
No way,
the
you
domain,
own Grab. How much you sell?
You know what? It was believe it or not, it was for like a dollar or something as part of a bigger deal to sell the previous company.
God.
It's a great domain, isn't it?
Yeah.
I paid.
Wow.
The asking price on that domain was $100,000. I said, great, let's do it. And then the guy who, on my team, Michael Zilberg, said, no, we're going to negotiate. And he negotiated down, I forget the number, $75,000 or something. It was worth it. We did a whole other thing with it. It was like $1 billion contest. Warren Buffett backed it. So I've been following the business a lot. The fact that when I went downstairs to get chips, they're not big on accepting credit cards in places, but they did have this big poster for Grab.com QR code so I could pay with the Grab payment.
Yeah, they're trying to build a super app right now in Asia, right? Like,
yeah.
Like kind of like the WeChat in China, right?
Yeah. You know what? The founder of Glint asked me, why is it that here these super apps are existing and there's a possibility, but in the US there isn't? I had such a hum and a hum and I don't know. What's your...
That's a great question. I have no idea. Why do you think that's the case?
Here's why I think. Yeah. I think because the internet, the mobile internet developed in the US first. And if you look back on the old phones, like when Uber launched, what did the phone look like? When Facebook launched, it was a tiny phone, very pixelated, right? Because it didn't have even Retina display. If you even included one message, it was too much to say, we are Uber and we all, which does rides and we do food and so on, overcomplicate that stupid little app. And so they all disambiguated or they all broke up. In Asia, the phones were bigger and clearer when they took off, and you could put more functionality in. And so why force somebody, if you could add more functionality, to go back to the home page and then come back to the next app when you could put it together? That's my theory. I've been thinking about it a lot.
Cool.
Anyway, Grab was a customer. How the hell did you get Grab as a customer?
Cold email.
Using your software?
Yeah, using my own software. I cold email them. Hey, this is what we're building. Look, do you think your sales team will find something like this interesting?
Because they're calling out a lot of restaurants.
I think so. Not just restaurants, but like they're like Grab for business. So basically like corporate, right? For corporate
rides.
Right? Corporate rights, right? So that's how they became an early beta user. But they were paying us like next to nothing, like $50 a month.
So, but they would have paid. They had money.
Yeah.
They paid next to
nothing. No, that was the very first iteration of the product. Like we didn't know how much we could charge, right?
So. Did it help that you were from Singapore?
Yeah.
It did.
I think so.
You worked that angle.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about getting other customers? Does it help that you're here?
No. So that's an interesting point that you brought up. So we are actually opening a US office next month. So we just hired our first US employee who is going to be US employee number one. So we're going to place him in San Francisco.
Okay.
In a WeWork in San Francisco,
And
then like we're just going to seat the office, you know, with him and basically expand from there. So it's interesting that we're from Silicon Valley. We came back to Singapore and then now we're opening a forward sales and marketing office back in Silicon Valley again.
I asked you why you left and you said, do you know how much engineers cost in San Francisco?
Yeah.
Which I do. you know, by the way, the hard thing is I still go to all these like kindergarten things. I talk to other parents. The engineers are making $300, $400, $500, easy,
yes.
Way more. They still bitch about not being able to find a house.
You are kidding me.
I swear, it just is endlessly about that. I get it. And so that's why you moved here, for developers. When you got here, were you selling internationally too?
Yes.
You
so
have a
from
sales
day
team?
One, we were global. We have customers in the US, right, in Hong Kong, in Australia, in the UK. From
and
day one.
For sales calls, were you the one at first who would get on call?
Yeah, I'll be like 2 a.m. I'll still be in the office, you know, doing like Zoom calls with people in the US.
2 a.m.
2 a.m.
Get up and do it.
Yeah.
Your relationship
sales. And then like 7 a.m. would be my next call with like someone on the East Coast on the West Coast.
Did you sleep in the office?
Yeah, in the early days. Yeah.
You did? On a mattress or on the floor?
On the couch. We had a red couch.
Okay.
Yeah. That was pretty nasty, but.
But you do it.
Yeah.
Venus, your wife's
She's used to it.
To this day. Is she kind of proud that you're doing this?
No, I'm much more relaxed these days. Yeah. I don't sleep in the office anymore.
But when you were, I'm trying to understand culturally.
Yeah.
Was she proud? Were you proud that you were working late, or is there an embarrassment and a stigma about working late?
I think neither. I think it is what it is. So
That's it.
Yeah, so for her, I think she was understanding. So like 7 p.m., she would just go back, she would do her stuff. And then I just, I'll just stay a bit more to wrap up my work. And then, I think it's getting quite late. I have a call tomorrow at 7. I'll probably just sleep over here. And it was pretty chill.
That's just the way life is.
Yeah, just the way life is.
Do you take vacations again?
Yeah, we do.
Where do you go?
My last vacation was 2 years ago, I think. We went to Japan, Tokyo. It was nice.
Okay.
When did you start dating her?
Wow.
Let me repeat the question. Ashwin was asking, just for people who are listening to the recording, I wish I could mic you, when did you start dating her? Yeah, good question in the timeline.
Very long ago. I think like almost...
This is the reason. Mm-hmm. Because in Singapore, uh-huh. you will often find that many of them will date from nearly high school or junior college.
Yes,
and date through the rest of their life. So they've already built the foundation.
Yes.
Just to be clear, he's saying Ashwin's saying that because you guys dated, and many people here date from high school on, got it, then you have that established relationship. Yeah. This is a phase in your life and you trust
each other. So from day one, when we started getting real software, we were already dating. Right? So like, kind of like she knew what kind of person.
Do you feel like, what else is out there? Like, I didn't get to date enough?
Not so much.
Sometimes.
not really. No.
No, not at all.
No,
huh?
Not really. Yeah, I think maybe because my brain is like fixated on work all the time.
That's it.
Like,
There's no sense of, I've got a party, I'm earning something here, I missed out. No.
No, not
that's
really.
That's a ridiculous thought.
I still lead a pretty austere life now.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right. And your parents, are they still living austere lives?
So that's an interesting thing. So my parents are still, I come from a humble background, right? So my parents are still living pretty
humble?
Austere.
Give me a sense of how humble.
My dad is not working due to health reasons.
Okay.
And my mom is a sole breadwinner. She's a clerk, right? And single-handedly, she brought up like, clerk.
Clerk. Okay.
Yeah, clerk. Sorry.
When you say poor or not well off as a kid, give me an example.
I wouldn't say that we are like,
not poor. What's the word?
I don't know, like lower middle income.
So what did you miss out on growing up? What was a thing that felt awkward?
I guess it's always like not being able to have the things that I want. Like everything
what?
That I want, I need like a toy. I want to buy a Star Wars toy.
You had to buy it with your own money?
Yeah. So I was actually a master of getting very high paid like part-time jobs. So like when I was secondary school, I was doing jobs that paid like $40 to $70 an hour.
Okay, how?
Right? So like... Basically, you know, there's this like theme park right in Singapore. So we wear this like costumes. Like I dressed up as a Power Ranger. I dressed up as
How'd
like
you get
a $40 sumo,
doing that?
Right? And then because it was shit. Like the costumes are hot.
So
it's
nobody
sweaty.
Would do it. It costs.
Yeah,
it's a $40
right. And
job
you have to go through this
it.
Like you and then people like throw shit on your head. But it paid well, right? So growing up, I was just do all these jobs to make pocket money, and then I just like blow it on like random rubbish.
All the stuff the kids just got.
Yeah, yeah.
And okay. And so you were saying something happened to your parents. I cut you off. So you grew up from humble background, but now your parents are?
Still humble.
Still? Oh, okay.
Still humble.
All right. And are you in the back of your mind, like fantasize one day I'm going to take care of them, I'm going to give them things that you do?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's
absolutely.
Part of the fire.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wowee, man.
You went to, so the junior college that you went to is very, very prestigious in Singapore. Brings out some of the most elite people.
Oh, yeah,
jobs.
You're saying the junior college was prestigious? Yes.
I was just doing the research.
Oh, my God. Wait, are you Singaporean?
I'm not.
No,
I'm familiar enough.
Okay.
But obviously, your peers, you didn't go to university after that. Your peers obviously went to some of the three universities here and then got really good jobs.
And some of them went to Ivy League schools. So basically, Rapid Institution is a feeder school to Ivy League schools.
Just to be clear, you're saying that you went to, I don't know how much people are picking up on the mic here. Ashwin and I were just like chatting yesterday via email. He heard that I was going to be in Singapore. He said, do you want to get together? I go, yeah. He pops up. He shows up. It's great. I said, hey, you're 5 minutes away from me. Okay, so all his friends were going to he went to prestigious high school?
Junior college.
And you're saying all his friends went to prestigious colleges. So
that's
what's the question?
Feeder school to the Harvard, Wharton, Stanford, where you get a fully paid scholarship and then the government pays for you to come back.
You should have gotten a scholarship to go to something like to Stanford, and the Singapore government would pay money to bring you back, and you still didn't do it. And what's your question for
them? So my question is, did you ever feel like an imposter when your friends were already doing this and you were not even pursuing an education?
Yeah,
you did not have a qualification. You didn't know how to sell. You knew a little bit of coding. Did you ever feel, I'm not qualified enough to do this?
Absolutely. Even up to today, right?
You still feel like an imposter?
Absolutely, right? Some days I walked into the office, like, wow, like this 6,000 square foot office, like almost 40 employees, and like, oh, I'm the CEO, like, nah, you gotta be kidding me, right? Like, up to today, yeah, absolutely. I don't think there's something that ever goes away, right? This imposter syndrome.
Yeah. You know what? And then there's some people who have, I don't know, I do think that some eventually it does go away. I think, and then I also think there's some people who have the opposite, who have this like this greatness syndrome where all they do is they think every little thing they do is great, which is...
Oh my God.
I don't know which one I would rather have. All right, what's the best part of having done this to gotten to where you are?
The team, absolutely.
Just getting to work with the people who you work with.
The team. Every day, you know, you get to choose the people that you work with. Everyone is like, I mean, not only are they like insanely talented at what they do, right, but they are great, very nice, you know, amazing people to like, I mean, friends.
I keep referring to Amy here. She is sitting here at the corner. She's a great supporter, right? What does she do at the company?
Marketing. Yeah.
Okay. How did you pick her?
I did not pick her. My co-founder hired her.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So my co-founder, heads up marketing. She's like the VP of product. In the early days, she was hacking marketing. So she hired, Amy.
Okay. And so you're why is she here with you now?
I have no idea. No. So Amy kind of like helps me organize like all of this, like, you know, marketing events, speaking events. From time to time, she just like come along, like photo ops, taking notes.
So she took a picture of you here. I think, did you hit me up and ask me what we were going to talk about?
I think so. No. Or was it me?
No.
Okay. Cool. I was especially eager for this. So I remember even sending you, didn't I send you an email like, was it to you or to someone on my team where I sent you guys an email with a screenshot of an old website?
Yeah, it's me. Yeah, you sent it to me. Yeah.
Like, look at what I'm finding about you. I'm so excited to do this. I was a little worried you were emailing me to say I'm not showing up. I go, look at what I'm finding. Get over here. I got to ask you about all this. All right.
Before we wrap up, I have one more question.
Yeah, one more question. Cool. Yes.
You finished Y Combinator 2016.
Yeah.
How long did you stay in San Francisco or the U.S. before moving here?
Let me repeat the question. He said, you finished 2016, Y Combinator. How long did it take you to get back here?
1 month.
1 month?
Yeah, so we finished Y Combinator around like late August, early September. I was back in Singapore on the 12th of October.
Wow.
Do you feel from 2016 through to now 2019 in the 3 years, you've sacrificed growth by not being in the U.S.? Would you have been in a much bigger place there than moving here?
I'll repeat the question just because I'm not sure what the mic is picking up on. He's saying, did you feel like you sacrificed growth by not being in the US? And it sounds like you're thinking maybe a little bit.
Yeah, potentially yes. I think potentially yes. But the truth is that we may not even be still around today if we stayed in the Bay Area. So we raised $1.2 million for our seed round, right? $1.2 million US dollars. That probably gets you like what, half an engineer in the Bay Area. But you know, with that $1.2 million, we were able to build a team of 10 engineers, right? Within the first like what, 9 to 10 months, right? And that really accelerated the product development. And now that we raised our Series A, $5.3 million US dollars, we have a bunch of revenue. Then we are going to open like a forward sales, right? And marketing office in the Bay Area. And hopefully that makes up for like, you know,
that lost time,
right? Yeah.
All right. The website for people who want to check it out is saleswhale.com. And for anyone who wants to come to like visit San Francisco and look around, there's nothing to see. Dude, there's nothing, right? You go see the Golden Gate Bridge, there's nothing there. The best thing you could do for yourself is go meet people, right?
Absolutely.
If you're a developer, you could get to meet someone like Justin Kahn. You could meet other people who are building phenomenal companies, and those relationships are ones you can draw on. The site's there's so much more to see here. Are there two buildings here? Maybe you would know, Ashwin. Two buildings with what looks like a boat on top of them? What is that?
It's just nearby. It's Marina Bay Sands. The casino.
Can I just walk on top of that boat-looking thing?
You can.
I take the elevator, I just go walk on there?
Yeah.
This city is freaking amazing.
This is the infinity pool, right? This is this swimming pool that like...
Yeah. Oh, I didn't expect it. I didn't expect to love the city. I didn't expect to have any views. I just thought I'd see a bunch of people who are working their butts off, and definitely see that. I went down for lunch. I made a mistake at noon. Everybody comes down for like their 10 minutes, then they're all gone. Go 12 to 10, and everyone's back at their desk. I want to thank the two sponsors who made this trip happen. The first, HostGator, really. I'm grateful to them for sponsoring this and making possible for me to travel the world and interview entrepreneurs and bring them to you. HostGator and TopTel have been with me since the beginning of this tour. Go check them out at hostgator.com/Mixergy. And if you want to hire a developer, go check out toptal.com/Mixergy. All right, Ashwin and I are going to go out for a drink. I'm going to go talk to as many people as possible from Singapore. Bye, everyone.